Coming up tomorrow, the town of Chapel Hill is inviting everyone to come together for a conversation about community safety at 6:30 p.m. at the DSI Comedy Theater on West Franklin Street. You can't see it, but I'm actually repping DSI right now with the shirt that I'm wearing. Everyone's invited to share their thoughts on how we can work together to promote a safer community. Visit townofchapelhill.org for more details. They are scheduling that partly in response to a number of reports of violence nationally and internationally that have people concerned. We're joined now on the air to talk about that and many other things by Ashley Campbell, Orange County Conservative. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. So let's talk about, and we were talking earlier about, like, what should we talk about today? And there are like 16 different issues. There's impact fees, which passed, or the bill eliminating impact fees, which passed the state Senate yesterday. There's a lot of, you mentioned First Amendment issues, a couple of Supreme Court decisions. I mentioned the one yesterday about sex offenders being able to get on social media, which was a unanimous decision. Was there another one that they
there was that one. That was Packingham versus North Carolina.
That was a North Carolina case.
The sex offender case originated from North Carolina. And then there is also Mattal versus Tam, which was the Slants case.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
This electronic rock band.
Yeah.
That.
And are you allowed to copyright an offensive name? Is that the upshot?
Gist.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the gist of it. And so, you know, one reason that's such a big case is because it's, again, unanimously reaffirmed that there's not a hate speech exception to the First Amendment. And so basically how that originated was that the federal Patent and Trademark Commission, I might have that name wrong, but they refused to allow this band that wanted to call themselves the Slants, which they picked deliberately because they are Asian, and they wanted to, like, all the members of this group are Asian, and they wanted to kind of, you know, have one of these, like, we're going to take it back. That kind of mindset.
But a rock band wanted to have a provocative name? I've never heard of that before.
Imagine. Right. And I mean, they're not even the first group, or maybe they're the first rock band, but they're not even the first attempt to try to, yeah, trademark this name or anything, but the government refused to register the Slants, and for a rock band, that's really detrimental because a lot of record labels won't even sign groups unless they have their trademark registered. And so if they want to go on and be successful, then they really needed this to happen. So they fought it up through the court all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said that it's unconstitutional viewpoint discrimination because trademarks are private speech. They're not government speech. And so they can't be regulated like that.
Although
so,
I can imagine it's hard to get into the business, but once you do, man, how much cred does that man have now? Like, remember back when the parental advisory sticker was a point of pride? And I was like, our name is so too hot for TV that the federal government wanted to shut us down over our name.
Oh my gosh. Right? Yeah. That takes me back. Wow. The parental advisory. That's right. Because that was maybe, was that Tipper Gore?
That was Tipper Gore. That was the late 80s, early 90s. Yeah. And then they put the parental advisory on, what was it, the Frank Zappa album that didn't have any actual lyrics on it?
Oh, right.
If I remember right.
Yeah, I think that was Frank Zappa.
Slightly before my time, but yeah.
Yeah, a little bit, but let's see. So, and then a lot of people are drawing comparisons to the Redskins case, which the band is not that excited about, from what I've seen them say about it. But the Redskins, of course, lost their trademark protection back in 2014, and so there's, you know, speculation that this will help their case.
Although I don't know if it's going to help them long term. If now you look at this case and it's like, well, can you trademark an offensive name? Oh, the answer is yes. Well, that's obviously a win for the Washington Redskins. It's like, yep, that's the first thing we think of when we think of what's a business with an offensive name.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's necessarily what you want as a football team, but
exactly.
Yeah, as a band, maybe you get some cred for it, but as a football team, not so much.
If they wanted to fight it on those grounds, I guess the path is a little bit clearer for them. So yeah, and then and the other free speech case that you mentioned, or well, maybe this is more freedom of association or being able to participate in the public square, was the Packingham versus North Carolina. So, you know, I'm a fan of that result as well, because I mean, there's a lot of, you know, registered sex offenders that are essentially, I mean, depending on it, the laws vary state by state, but there's just some things out there, like, you know, if a 17-year-old boy has a picture of his 17-year-old girlfriend, sex offender. I mean, stuff like that is just a little too stringent. And the law that we had on the books in North Carolina, you know, prevented any registered sex offender from visiting a social networking website that allowed minors, or to create personal web pages. So, I mean, that's Facebook, Twitter, like tons of any website.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, it was going to be overturned. I suppose.
And this is, both of those were unanimous decisions, right?
That's the Supreme Court.
Like we always talk about, and one of the things that I kind of want to talk about through all of this, and we wanted to talk about the Julius Caesar issue is the extent to which we have a tendency to sort of emphasize the points of conflict, right? The polarization and the discord.
Yeah.
And we talk about the other side as if they're like universally evil or deluded or in it for the money or whatever.
It's more exciting.
And it's a lot more exciting. And I mean, people cash in on it. Politicians get votes from it, and pundits get jobs from it, and news outlets get ratings from it. But for the most part, like, there's a lot more agreement than disagreement. We were talking about this last week with the General Assembly, where I was saying, and I'm still saying, and I kind of feel bad about it, because I always feel bad when I take an extreme position, but with the Supreme Court decision on gerrymandering, again, a unanimous decision, now you've got a question of legitimacy in the General Assembly. Like, every law they pass is a law that's passed by a General Assembly that was elected under unconstitutional district lines. For me to say that is kind of an extreme position to take, so I feel bad about it, but at the same time, I think it's a correct position, so I say it. But at the same time, you go in and look at the bills that the General Assembly has actually passed, the vast majority of them got signed by Governor Cooper. The vast majority of them were unanimous decisions. So as much as we complain about what the Democrats are doing, what the Republicans are doing, oh God, they're taking this position, what are they doing with this budget, oh my God, the vast majority of the time we're in unanimous agreement with each other. And it's the same thing with the Supreme Court. Like, we always talk about, oh, the 5-4 splits, and if Kennedy resigns at the end of this month, the balance of power is going to shift and every case is going to go in the opposite direction. Most cases are unanimous. Like, or not most,
or
but a significant number, and that's the things that we think of as being super highly polarized. But in this case, unanimous decisions all around.
I mean, I could see someone saying, well, you know, your agreement with the Supreme Court decision is extreme. But I mean, it's kind of interesting when we get to that point. I mean, I think you have a lot to back up your position rather than being considered too extreme.
Right. And especially when you've got the sort of quote unquote far left and far right justices. And even to say far left and far right justices, you got to put that in air quotes, because more than anything else, you get to the Supreme Court, you care about the rule of law, you care about precedent, you care about so many things before you even begin to talk about the politics behind whatever issue it is that you're talking about.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's always, you know, I'm just sort of cynical by nature. There's always some politics in play.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
definitely.
Will we ever know what really goes on with every law, you know, how the sausage is made? Of course not, I hear what you're saying.
But I think you're right, and I think the Supreme Court is right about, Packingham, is that the name of the case?
Yes.
Versus North Carolina? Yeah, because I'm of the opinion that if you do the crime, you should do the time, and then you're done. And then after that, once you've served your sentence and you've served your parole, I don't care what the crime is, you shouldn't have to wear a stone of shame around your neck for the rest of your life. And if we have a problem with that with sex offenders, let's talk about rehabilitation and how the system can do better as far as that goes, rather than saying, oh, you've been convicted of this crime, therefore you're not allowed to hold a job or leave this building for the rest of your life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think there's a lot of areas, you know, sex offenses being one of them, where we could have a lot of good reform, you know, all across the country. you know, there are some terrible people out there that really yeah. deserve to spend the rest of their lives in prison. Yeah. So I'm not talking about them, but...
And if that's the case, then we should have a law. Yeah. Like, that should be the sentence. You spend the rest right. of your life in prison.
But this yeah. this guy, for example, that the case is about, posted something on Facebook that basically was... he got a parking ticket dismissed, and he said, "Thank you, local police department,
for dismissing the parking
for
ticket."
Dismissing
yeah.
it, and that was it. That was his crime. So something like that, it just you know, the punishment doesn't seem to yeah. to fit the crime.
Man, if only they hadn't dismissed the parking ticket, he wouldn't have a Supreme Court case named after
well,
him.
Well, maybe it was meant to be.
I guess, yeah.
We'll see.
Speaking with Ashley Campbell, again, Orange County conservative, and we're talking about sort of First Amendment cases. This isn't a First Amendment case, but Julius Caesar. There's the protests that are going on in New York. Because what is it? The public theater does Shakespeare in the Park, uh-huh. and one of their productions this year is Julius Caesar, and there's the assassination scene where Julius Caesar comes out, and they've produced the play such that Julius Caesar is made up to vaguely resemble Donald Trump, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's what's gotten a certain subset of the right, I guess you could say, yeah. upset, and I haven't seen the play itself, so I've only seen written descriptions
right.
of how it's portrayed. But they're saying it's bloody, it's awful, it's objectifying Donald Trump, and it's in a way that makes it you know, suggest that it's making it, what's the term, normalizing, you know, assassination of the president.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, we did have this shooting that just occurred right before the congressional baseball event.
Steve Scalise, yeah.
So, you know, all that's going on in the background, of course.
The whole Kathy Griffin thing.
That, too.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of moving parts here.
A lot to consider. But... you know, and then you have these some folks with a right-leaning alternative media outlet that disrupted the play, I think, last Friday, and you said that they're, you know, all the people applauding it were Nazis, and that it was just offensive and should be shut down. But you know, and I am such a free speech absolutist, so I can't get behind a disruption like that. And I've seen the people, Laura Loomer, I think is the name of the activist who mm-hmm. jumped on the stage to disrupt the play. And she said, well, things like, well, you know, we need to use the left's tactics against them. And I'm just thinking to myself, well, no, I mean, not when what you're doing is the opposite of what you want, which is free speech. So, no, I can't
yeah.
support
there's
this
also,
kind of
I mean,
action.
There's also context, too. Like, first of all, Julius Caesar, I mean, I've only read it once, but it's not a pro-assassination play, right?
No.
Like, the larger issue is much bigger. And the other thing,
yeah.
too, is this is not the first time a company has done Julius Caesar and depicted Julius Caesar as whoever the current president
right,
is. Like,
a
you
contemporary.
Can go back and find Obama Julius Caesars and Bush Julius Caesars. And I remember actually I was talking about this earlier when this first came up back in the 90s. This wasn't Julius Caesar, but I saw Midsummer Night's Dream where it was an outdoor kind of in the park thing where Bottom goes to sleep and wakes up with the head of Bill Clinton.
Oh, wow.
Instead of the head of an
yeah.
ass, it's the head of Bill Clinton. And then he just goes around with a Clinton mask on the
oh
entire
my gosh.
Time. Because it's whoever the current leader is. Like, it's,
yeah.
it's that. And they do that with Julius Caesar on a fairly
sure,
regular
sure.
basis. And is it artistically lazy? Maybe you could make that argument. Did they go
yeah.
over the top with the blood? I don't know because I haven't seen it. But to say that this is somehow
right.
new or unique, I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah. I think, there's a feeling on the right side of the political spectrum that it is a little disturbing. I think, you know, I would say regardless of who the president is, it's a little disturbing, but they have every right, I would argue, to do this if they want to. That's their interpretation. you know, there's the consideration of government funding, I guess, you know, if taxpayers are funding this, is it really a good thing to fund? I think that
National Endowment for the Arts.
Endowment for the Arts. They have a big disclaimer on the front of their webpage that said we do not support Julius Caesar, because I think they were getting so much hate mail or something about that. And then there's also, you know, people have brought up the Obama rodeo clown, mm-hmm. Who, you know, I guess lost his job and was kind of ostracized because he put on an Obama mask at a local rodeo and made fun of Obama, and, you know, was one of the guys that was just, he was just a rodeo clown.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And they're saying, well, you can't do this at a local rodeo, but you can put on this play killing the president in Central Park. You know, so is that a fair shake? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, so I, of course, don't agree with the harsh crackdown on the rodeo clown a few years ago either. But
did you expect to, when you woke up this morning, did you expect you were going to say that today?
Well, it has been a thing that, you know, has just sort of stuck around in the minds of conservatives for a few years about, you know, how sensitive portrayals of President Obama were, you know, what, especially when he was still president, whereas, you know, with Trump in comparison and Bush before, not so much, but, you know, I still wouldn't argue that we should just put a stop to, you know, making fun of our elected leaders,
even the president. Which is such an important part of freedom of speech. And, I mean, you can make arguments on either side, like the punishment that, or the, like the backlash that Kathy Griffin is getting versus the backlash that Ted Nugent didn't get for saying what he said. Like, you can go in the exact opposite direction, but those are anecdotes. Like,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, well, what did Ted Nugent do? I miss that.
Obama can suck on my machine gun, I think was his line. Yeah.
Okay.
Among others.
Yeah, I know. And a lot of it just depends on the mood of the media and, you know, other events, political events that are going on at the time. So some of it is just talked up to be bad timing. And, you know, so it's, I just, you know, I can't get behind those on the right that are saying, well, we just need to draw a line here and, you know, free speech is great, but when it's offending our side,
as soon as you start saying that, it's
a little bit. Yeah, exactly. I've heard a lot of it. Free speech is good, but lately.
Yeah, so. There's a lot of that. Okay, so we got to wrap up, but I think the point that I want to get out of this is there are people out there who benefit from sowing discord and polarization, and I think the more that we can, without pushing the legitimate disagreements that we have. Like, there are legitimate disagreements that and arguments that should be had, but the extent to which we focus exclusively on that and make money off of promoting that and sowing that idea that the other side is evil and we are good and we can do no wrong and they can do no good. I think those voices should be, like, not silenced, but we should be focusing on the people who are concerned about actually moving forward and solving problems, which is hard to find in punditry.
Oh, yeah, especially punditry and politics, too. I've gotten a lot of, you know, at times I think deserved pushback of her being too idealistic about things like free speech. And that's fine. But I think also sometimes when I hear folks say, well, we just need politicians to set aside these petty arguments and tackle issues and look for real solutions, I feel like that's a little bit idealistic, because anything that that government can touch, they're going to make it partisan. They're
right.
going to argue about it. They want to win that next election.
Yeah, exactly. So let's have the arguments. Let's have the partisanship. And let's also focus on the fact that, like, 22 of the 27 laws that have been passed by the General Assembly this year passed unanimously. Like, that's something you never hear in the news, but it's true. It happened.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if the news could just put the number of the bill on there, that would make
right.
me happy.
Yeah, some of the bills that passed, I was reading, I was like, I have no idea this passed.
Yeah.
Or what it does.
And the legislature's website makes it so hard to find
help.
Out
yeah.
what it is. They could really stand to fix that. But yeah, no, I mean, that's very true. I think that the media doesn't do enough to sort of support report those stories when the turnout or the results of the vote is like that.
The boring and unanimous votes,
yeah, exactly. You know, for good or ill, depending on your perspective.
We got to let you go, but Ashley Campbell, thank you so much, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Aaron.